TMZ TV.
Let's talk about the end times, shall we? But before I do that, it occurred to me that I've never shown you what I'm looking at while I record these shows in my car. You always see it from this angle. I'm going to turn the viewpoint around and show you what I'm looking at. Prepare yourselves, because it is a vista. It is, well, there's no words to describe it. So let me flip the phone around and show you. Look at this. Yes, this is what I look at when I do this show. I'll show you the whole thing here. Look, electric meter of the cottage. If I pan to the right here, you see the air conditioning unit. If I pan to the left, I have my car lights on, which is the cause of the glow. There's my laundry room, that white door right there. See that white door? Yeah. Right there, that's the laundry room door. Just want to bring you into my world. I'd love for you to come into my world if anybody wants to visit me. Get some fellowship. You know what's going to happen if you do. I'm going to put you on the show. I don't force anybody to do that. I request. I said many members of the body of Christ would like to see you. They want to know that you exist. They want to talk to you. Most people are very nervous about that, so I comfort them and I, you know, assure them that if I can do it, they can do it. And most people go for it. You're one of the ones who will go for it. I know. Let's talk about the end times a little bit. There's a verse here that is an astounding verse. It's often misinterpreted. I've said this before, but I haven't said it in a while. And so I want to make sure I have new subscribers. There's about 40 new subscribers coming on every month. It's fantastic what God is doing with this show. I praise Him for this. The word is getting out. The word is getting out. And so what I'm going to say to you today is very important. And I haven't said it. A lot of people haven't heard it. So I'm going to say it again. But I'm going to start in Matthew chapter 24. And coming out, Jesus went from the sanctuary, and his disciples approached to exhibit to him the buildings of the sanctuary. Of course, the disciples were very proud of the sanctuary, as they should have been. I mean, this was where God deigned to dwell until the death of Jesus Christ on the cross. In the moment of his expiration, we know the temple veil was rent in two, and the Shekinah glory, that is the presence, was no longer there. Now the Spirit of God dwells in the hearts of people. But at that time, the temple was holy ground, and the disciples exhibited to him the buildings of the sanctuary. Yet he, answering, said to them, "Are you not observing all these?" There's more than one. There was the wall. There was the sanctuary. There was the whole temple enclosure. "Verily I am saying to you, under no circumstances may a stone here be left on a stone which shall not be demolished." Sobering words. Just when you're trying to have a happy day, a nice afternoon, look at the temple. Isn't it beautiful? Look at the marble, the architecture, the gold. It's just astounding, isn't it? Jesus says, yes, it is. However, "Verily I am saying to you." Whenever Jesus starts a sentence with "verily I am saying to you," batten down the hatches. Seriously. Hold on for life, because something disturbing is coming. "Under no circumstances may a stone here be left on a stone which shall not be demolished." And we know that Jerusalem was judged because she did not recognize the hour of her visitation. And the Roman army came under Titus, and they sacked Jerusalem in 70 AD, and they tore the temple, they burned it, they tore it down, and as Jesus said here, not one stone was left upon another one. And just as a side issue here, then what the heck is the Wailing Wall? We're told that the Wailing Wall is a remnant of Herod's temple from Jesus' day. And we know that Jews from all over the world go to the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. They stick prayers into the little cracks there. Presidents, prime ministers, dignitaries, far and wide, go to that wall. But it's not a remnant of the temple because of this prophecy. Not one stone was left upon another one. In fact, the Wailing Wall is a remnant of the Roman barracks. That's right, the Praetorium of Pontius Pilate. The Roman barracks, if you go to askelm.com, Ernest Martin has an amazing video and teaching on the location of the original temple and the layout of the temple area in Jerusalem. And the Roman barracks took up most of that whole area where the Dome of the Rock is now. That was not the site of the temple. The temple was on the mount a few meters to the west, where the Kidron River is. I think that's the Kidron there. Don't quote me on that. It's one of those rivers that flows near the Gehenna, near the valley of Gehenna. But how's this? The Wailing Wall is a remnant of the Roman barracks because Titus left part of the Roman barracks up. He destroyed the temple, but he left part of the Roman barracks up as like an FU to Israel to remind them who was in charge here, the Romans. He's not going to tear down his own building, but he sure as heck going to tear down the Jewish building, and he did. And what Jesus is teaching here is a harbinger of a greater destruction. This isn't even what I want to talk about. This, everything I've said is, the last 5 minutes is a sidetrack. But people get confused because people think that 70 AD was the prophecy that Jesus was speaking of in Matthew chapter 24. But you see, this is the trick. Jesus purposely, God is always doing this. He's balancing his revelation on a high wire. And if you blink, you're going to fall, and there's no net, okay? You're going to be embarrassed theologically, eschatologically, and every kind of logically there is, because you will, you have to pay attention here, especially. And the same with the book of the unveiling. The time element shifts. Between one verse and another verse, you have a time shift from the present to the future, then back to the present. So you have to pay attention. So yes, Jesus here is talking about the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. But people take that information and they think that the rest of the chapter is also talking about 70 AD. This is where people called preterists get the idea that all the events of Revelation took place when the Romans sacked Jerusalem in 70 AD. You have to be crazy or under the influence of some narcotic of some kind to read the events of Revelation with a third of mankind being killed, of the locusts who sting for 5 months, of the sun being darkened, and then the sun scorching, and then a third of the waters being fouled. You have to be nuts to read any account, even Josephus's account of the sacking of Jerusalem in 70 AD, to think that that equals that. That sounds kind of like the events of Revelation. No, it sounds nothing like the events of Revelation. This is where people go off track. They see this, that the temple will be demolished because judgment came on the generation. Judgment came on the generation that rejected Jesus Christ and did not recognize the hour of her visitation. And yes, even at that time, they also fled to the hills. Let's just continue here and we'll see some similarities. Let me say it this way, and I'm not even getting to the knockout verse here, but this was a dress rehearsal. The sacking of Jerusalem by Rome was a dress rehearsal for the ultimate future attempted sack of Jerusalem by the nations at the end of the 7-year tribulation period. And the man of lawlessness, and Jesus is telling them, whenever you may perceive me, I'm skipping ahead to verse 15 of Matthew 24, whenever you may be perceiving the abomination of desolation, which is declared through Daniel, the prophet, standing in the holy place. Now, what's interesting is Titus may have done that, but Paul, in his letters, talked about a future desolation. So I'm not denying that Titus, the captain of the Roman army, the legion of Rome, he might have stood in the holy place. And in that day, yes, let those in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not descend to take away the things out of his house. Basically, get out of Dodge. Let him who is in the field not turn back. And you know the rest. Woe to those who are pregnant and those suckling in those days. But this, and except those days were discounted, no flesh at all would be saved. No flesh at all would be saved. Jesus is no longer talking. I don't think he's talking at all about 70 AD after this. Because if we go back to verse 3. And now at his sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. And he just prophesied about the temple. That was in verse 2 of Matthew 24. Now his disciples approached to exhibit to him the buildings of the sanctuary. So at that time, they are in the temple enclosure. But look at what happens in one verse, verse 3. This is why I tell you the viewpoint is always changing. It's balanced on a high wire, and you need to pay attention. Now at his sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us when will these things be? And, big and, when will these things be? That is the demolition of the temple. And what is the sign of thy presence and of the conclusion of the eon? So now the question shifts from when in the world will there be no stone left upon another one of this temple? And, by the way, as long as we're at it, Jesus, what is the sign of your presence and of the conclusion of the eon? So now they're expanding their viewpoint. And maybe it's occurring to them that what Jesus is prophesying concerning the holy city, Jerusalem, not that they even understood that, but what he is prophesying will be a microcosm, or as I said earlier, a dress rehearsal of a greater destruction to come in the latter days that will also involve a temple, but in those days it will be the false temple, and it won't be Titus that will be the man of lawlessness. Titus was not the man of lawlessness prophesied by Daniel or by Paul. Because in verse 15, Jesus is already talking about the conclusion of the eon. And answering, Jesus said to them, beware that no one should be deceiving you, for many shall be coming in my name. I'm telling you, at this point on, he's shifting back and forth a little bit from the destruction of Jerusalem, which was forthcoming, and the destruction of the earth at the end of the eon, which is way future. And both of these events mark his two comings. Isn't that interesting? His first coming and the humiliation, which no prophet really saw. They're all looking for one coming. They're looking for Christ to come in great power, political power, take the reins of government, put Israel at the head and not the tail. And yet, like Mark Twain, right? Halley's Comet came at the beginning, when the day Mark Twain was born and the day he died, Halley's Comet appeared. Maybe I forget how old Mark Twain was, 70-something. Mark Twain says, I came in with Halley's Comet, I'll go out with Halley's Comet. Well, listen to this. Jesus Christ came in with a destruction of the temple, and he will return with a destruction of the false temple, and in fact, the destruction of a third of the earth. The holy city will be rent by a giant earthquake, and this was a mere dress rehearsal, ladies and gentlemen. The destruction of Jerusalem by Titus was a mere dress rehearsal. Answering, Jesus said to them, beware that no one should be deceiving you. Here's the verse, verse 5 of Matthew 24. I'm getting it in here at the end of the show. Many shall be coming in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and shall be deceiving many. I want to stop right there. I might continue on this tomorrow. I might not. I'm not promising anything, but look at this verse. You've heard this verse many times, and the end time people love this. I'm not an end time person. I know things about the conclusion of the eon. I don't even like end times because that's so Christian. I'm all about the conclusion of the eon. Ho ho, that sounds much more elegant, much more intelligent. someone who says the conclusion of the aeon. What are the signs, as the disciples did, of your presence and the conclusion of the aeon? Much better than end times. Too Christian-y for me. Whenever a Christian says, what do you know about the end times? This is what you say. Well, I don't know much about the end times, but what would you like to know about the conclusion of the aeon? That's what we're interested in. The key in our day, as it was in Jesus' day, is to beware of deception. And we know that deception is dressed in righteous garb. Satan is disguised as a messenger of light. I will continue to remind you of that, and we're going to see it here. Many shall be coming in my name, saying, I am the Christ. I always wondered at this. When I was a kid, when I first got my NASB Bible in 1979, for some reason, the first book I read was Daniel, because I was interested in, at that time, end times. Now I'm interested in the conclusion of the aeon, but of course, Daniel brought me to Matthew 24, and I thought, if anybody comes saying, I am the Christ, what a joke. Like, what, some guy is going to show up in a beard and a pair of Levi's and say, I am the Christ. And there are some goofballs out there. You can go on YouTube and find them. I don't recommend it, but they actually think they are the Christ. It's like, nobody's deceived by that. Some hippie guy in India, or in the banks of the Ganges, up in the holy mountains of the Himalayas.
I am the Christ.
Nobody's going to be deceived by that. Some guy looks like Don Rickles is the Christ. But that's not what they're saying. Many will come saying, I am the Christ. Remember, Jesus is speaking. He said, many will come in my name saying that I, Jesus Christ, am the Christ. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They will acknowledge that Jesus Christ is, they will be saying. Many shall come in my name saying that I, Jesus Christ, am the Christ. They'll be acknowledging that Jesus is the Christ. But Jesus, speaking in the first person, says many will be saying, I am the Christ. They're not saying, quote, I am the Christ. They're saying Jesus is the Christ. You follow me now. Isn't this a game changer? Because the entire Christian religion says that he is the Christ. They say he's the Christ. But again, as I told you over and over again, they're worshiping a false Christ. They're worshiping another Jesus. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. And the deception, my goodness, people, it's not going to be some guru in the Himalayas saying,
I am the Christ.
It's not going to be a Maharishi. It's not going to be some guy in blue jeans who has a Messiah complex. I am the Christ. No, they're going to say that Jesus is the Christ. And that's how sweet the deception is. That they, again, many people think that Christianity can't be wrong because they're saying he is the Christ. They're saying Jesus, the historical Jesus, is the Christ. And they're coming in his name. It says right there, many shall be coming in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and shall be deceiving many. These are the same people who, when Jesus Christ returns, will say, Lord, Lord, didn't we do this in your name? Didn't we do this in your name? Didn't we say that you, Jesus Christ, were the Christ? And he'll say, depart from me, workers of lawlessness, I never knew you. Wow, it turns out that indeed they will be deceiving many.